Order. Before the at ease, we had amendment number 2 moved and before us under debate. Representative Hanley.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. This, as was presented before, this amendment basically allows, it takes out totally the automatic increase based on any consumer price index. So there would not be even allowed one automatic increase as we just passed. The bill would stand with the increase that we passed, a 70% increase. If municipalities chose or felt that there was another increase needed, they would come back to the legislature and push it through. So basically, this amendment makes no automatic increases.
Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think the argument for and against automatic increases both have some merit. I'll argue against this amendment because, as I mentioned earlier, this schedule does not bring it up to even par with what the adjustment schedule would require. It's only 70% of that level. When this adjustment takes place 3 years, or actually 6 years from now, when this adjustment takes place, we'll be even further out. It won't be at a 70%. It'll probably be more down closer to 50 or so. All the one-time adjustment would do would be raise it back up to that 70 or maybe 75% level. After that, you have to come back to the legislature. So I'd argue against the amendment.
Representative Zawacki.
We have a short, brief at ease, Mr. Speaker.
The House stand at ease. House come back to order. The amendment number 2 is before us. Representative Navarre.
Speaker, I'd like to call the House on the bill and the amendments.
The House has been called on the bill. Any further debate on amendment number 2? Representative Hanley.
I'll just wrap up if that's okay, Mr. Speaker. Again, as I mentioned the other day, I just have a philosophical problem with allowing a tax increase based on a consumer price index that doesn't come back before the body. And this bill would eliminate that possibility. The process still works. They can come before us. I'd support amendment number 2.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have some legal questions generally, and I've been talking with the bill sponsor about this. There may be other ways of skinning the cat, too. I'm somewhat concerned about the legislature not involved in a tax like this. I'm going to oppose the amendment, I think, as it is. But hopefully the bill will be reconsidered, and I'm going to be doing some checking with legal counsel. There may be other ways of skinning the cat to keep the legislature involved.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. With the amendment that just passed and as it relates to this amendment here, I only have one question because it oftentimes happens, and we have seen it time after time. When we allow automatic increases or when we grant increases based on the cost of living, we never see any decreases in case the cost of living goes down. So if you'd allow me the leeway, Mr. Speaker, I would like to ask the maker of amendment number 2 so that I can make a judgment here on number 3, that what if the cost of living goes down in the next 3 years? Does that mean then that that's going to be reflected with lower charges 3 years from now, or does it only take effect if the cost of living goes up?
Representative Kopanen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is essentially a share revenue measure for municipalities. I would have been happier with it if it had been made more general, but at least we can answer this question because most of us are property owners and we do pay a tax based on the, which varies automatically. It's known as the property tax, which is set at a mill rate, which is based on the assessed valuation of the property, which goes up and down with the market, and I have to say that I've been paying considerable on my homestead because it's in the neighborhood of some subdivisions, so I'm get treated like a subdivision owner. Fortunately, the value of the subdivisions has gone down, and while I don't exactly mourn the position of the real estate salesman who's been stuck with a lot of lots he can't move, I have to be, I doubly rejoice because my particular property tax has finally gotten down to a reasonable level. So we could solve this debate entirely by fixing the tax at a percentage of the value of the automobile rather than at a fixed figure, and then we wouldn't be having all this debate. Thank you.
Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In response to the member from Mat-Su, the language is written that so that it would allow to reflect changes in the consumer price index. It doesn't limit it to only up. It could also be down.
Not likely, though. Okay. Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall amendment number 2 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? The clerk tally the board.
19 yeas, 19 nays.
Amendment number 2 has failed adoption. The bill is back before us in third reading and under debate. Representative Barnes.
Mr. Speaker, prior to the time that we vote on this bill, I would like to bring up a letter of intent.
Do you want to do it before we vote?
Yes, I do.
Letter of intent? Well, that's Representative Barnes.
Speaker, could we have a brief head?
Yeah. Ramona. Will the House come back to order? Before the Eddies, we have the bill before us in third reading and subject to debate. The letter of intent question usually goes with a disposal of that bill one way or the other, thus is outside the present vote that we're going to be taking. So is there any debate? Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I, in the last Eddies, very briefly, spoke with legal counsel and am informed that there may indeed be a way of breaking this impasse, and I'm going to ask to reconsider my vote on this so that we can hopefully deal with this over the next day.
Okay. Representative Martin.
I guess I got that. Were we considering before we vote on it?
Well, that's after the letter of intent, and then the others coming in. So okay. It'll work out.
I thought I missed something. Hey, Mr. Speaker, normally I'm not the one to vote for taxes. But on this one here, I will, and I'll explain that, even though my constituents, my redneck constituents, may not understand. My problem with our Constitution is that we really don't have an avenue in this state where cities as local governments and local assemblies do not have the freedom to raise or lower taxes according to their needs. In our Constitution, Article 9, Section 1, says that the power of taxation shall not be surrendered. Now, you would think that were the people of the Boston Tea Party speaking, but it's not. Our Constitution gives all powers of taxation to the state, and we do delegate some taxes to the local government, and we put caps on them. And I think that is not right. I think that's contrary very much to the intent of our founding fathers, not the frame of the Constitution, but the founding fathers. So in this case here, as we see, we know we're going to lower the state revenues, whether it be revenue sharing or municipal aid or whatever, those things are decreasing. And at the same time, I do believe, like the gentleman from Fairbanks says, that we need to get off the one major source of tax, the property tax, and perhaps allow local government other sources of revenue to take care of the roads, the schools, the health and social service program. So that's the reason why we'll be voting for this bill. But I think the long answer should be that somehow, whether we change the state constitution and allow the people, someone brought here now, that the people don't have the right to speak to legislators as much as they do to the assembly people about the needing of taxes, whether it be earmarked for a specific purpose or not. Here's a perfect example where this problem would be handled better locally than it is through us to pass through taxations.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, today I'm going to vote in support of this bill, but I am going to serve notice that should the letter of intent not pass, that I will then tomorrow change my vote on this bill, and I'd like to state why. I believe that there's not a member of this body that does not know that we're in a very tight budgetary crunch in this state, that there are people that are going to have to be laid off, and that we don't need to add 3 new employees to the budget. The testimony in the Finance Committee was that the Department of Motor Vehicles would need 3 new employees because that when people find out it's going to cost them more, they're going to be irate, so it's going to take them longer to discuss it. Well, I submit to this body that it doesn't take longer to collect $60 than it does $80 or vice versa. People are going to pay what they have to pay to register their vehicles and pay taxes on them. I recall the arguments that was before the state at the time that we passed the permanent fund dividend. And then Governor Jay Hammond was known to muse from time to time that people would be, if we gave them a permanent fund dividend, would be more willing to pay for their services. I think that we have certainly reached the point where the payment of services is going to cost more, and certainly the people will be glad that they have a permanent fund dividend of some level to pay for some of those services with. But I do not believe, again, that there is any justification whatsoever to add 3 new people to the budget to be carried forth from year to year through this piece of legislation.
Representative Sherry Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd just like to associate myself with the remarks of the previous speaker. I think it probably what the response from the DMV folks will be is the legislature did it, and it doesn't take very long to say that. Thus, they will probably all call us rather than keeping those folks on the line any longer. Thank you.
Representative Lehman.
Mr. Speaker, I just want to note that there is a loose correlation between the value of a vehicle and the tax. And there are possibly other ways that, and I know this is how it's done now, but it, based on the age of the vehicle, there really has no relationship to what the value of the vehicle is. It seems to me that it would be a fairer mechanism if we could somehow tie it to value. On the other hand, I look at the vehicles I own, and they're way over here in the far right-hand column, so maybe from a personal perspective, I ought to just keep my mouth shut. But on the other hand, I think the representative from Fairbanks made a comment earlier about tying to the value of the vehicle, and that, I think, makes some sense. The problem that I see is it's probably complex, and you're almost creating a three-dimensional matrix. As when you create this thing, it's probably even tougher and probably have to add more than 3 employees to figure it out. But just wondered if maybe the sponsor could address that and see if we even considered that at all in redoing this bill.
Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. That was actually discussed, that particular idea was actually discussed and discounted because it's easy enough to know what year the car is, but going out and trying to adjust for schedule for values, and then having to look up those schedules just makes it administratively pretty unwieldy. And this is the simplest manner that still makes an attempt, although it doesn't get all the way there, of reflecting the value of the vehicle in the tax. And the newer the car, the higher you pay. It's the best we could do in order to try to make it administratively viable.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 309, Finance Amendment, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk tally the board? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
32 yeas, 6 nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 309, Finance Amendment, has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call on final passage be considered the roll call on the effective date clause.
Are there any objection as to the adoption of that effective date clause? Hearing none, the effective date clause has been adopted. Mr. Majority Leader. Okay, notice of reconsideration has been given on said bill, but Representative Barnes will.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to move the letter of intent that has been distributed for CS for House Bill 309, Finance. And the debate on it, Mr. Speaker, is essentially the debate that I have given earlier, that there is no way that I believe that we need to have three new employees for 6 months, a year, 2 years, or whatever to administer this legislation. Although the Division of Motor Vehicles put into the fiscal note 6 months appropriation, we all know that they won't last 6 months. Once they're there, they're going to stay until we have had to take them out through the budget process. And I did state in the Finance Committee, I believe it is so, that this fiscal note is a sham, because sometime back, the Division of Motor Vehicles lost some employees, and I see this as a way they're recouping the employees. Thank you.
Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to also speak in favor of this letter of intent, not because the speaker who spoke just before me threatened me or threatened not to vote for the bill. What I think, Mr. Speaker, is that this year, when we're talking about significant reductions in the budget, that a fiscal note like such as this can be considered during the discussions of the appropriate level of funding for this department and this agency in this year's budget. I also note that with the increase in from 5% to 8%, there would be some additional revenues as this increase is ratcheted up that the legislature could then apply to the Division of Motor Vehicles if they felt that it was appropriate and justified expenditure of those funds. So I will remove my objection to the letter of intent.
Well, are there any objections to this letter of intent? No objections. The letter of intent has been adopted and will carry with the reconsideration of the bill. Are there any objections to moving back up to messages from the Senate? Hearing none, Madam Clerk.
Message dated March 2nd. The Senate has passed the following and transmitted it for consideration. Senate Joint Resolution Number 52 by the Senate Rules Committee, supporting the inshore-offshore fisheries allocation plans proposed by the North Pacific Fishery Management Council.
Standing Committee, Resources. Mr. Majority Leader, we have some citations, I believe. Mr. Majority Leader.
We have 10 citations on the calendar today, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the citations honoring Rick Townsend, Jordan Jensen, Kay Frank, Rusty Grilly, Donna York, Virgil Anderson, Frederick Eastow, Anthony Jones, the in memoriams, Gregory Furin, and Claire Shoup be approved.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, citations have been adopted. Unfinished business, Representative Davidson.
Mr. Speaker, may I ask for a brief at ease?
The House stand at ease. Will the House come back to order? We are under unfinished business. Is there any unfinished business to come before this body? Mr. Majority Leader?
Friend in gallery, gallery A, if we can go back up to introduction again.
I'd like to introduce Mr. Robert Glass.
And one other thing, I'm going to ask in a minute to come back up to unfinished business. We have three requests for excused absence. I want to check them over, but I will be asking to come back up so nobody panic, please.
Okay. Any further unfinished business? Representative Davidson?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to move and ask unanimous consent that I be allowed to waive the five-day rule and put the body on notice that I would like to hear Senate Joint Resolution 52 a week from today, on next Monday. The resolution deals with the onshore-offshore issue and has a tremendous impact on the fisheries economy of our state, and I would ask the members' indulgence to assist me in hearing this important resolution.
Hearing objection, Representative Martin.
Mr. Speaker, the major purpose for the five-day rule is not for our convenience, but the extremely important part of allowing the people time. As the gentleman said, there's a lot of interest, and it probably is. And so you should give those people the time, certain when it will be held, not within 5 days, but after 5 days, and let them adjust their schedule to be here, a teleconference, whatever. An extremely important bill like that, I wouldn't be so quick to waive a five-day rule on, sir.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's important to get that, as I understand it, back to Congress. Shouldn't be particularly controversial. Time is of the essence here. We're giving as much notice as possible. This is a procedural motion if objections are maintained. It is procedural. It is procedural. Thank you.
What does procedure mean?
Well, are the objections maintained? There seems to be a time frame, and I guess most people seem to be in agreement with it.
Your people, you all talk about open meetings.
Are the objections maintained? Okay. Hearing no objections, the five-day rule has been waived for Senate Joint Resolution 52. Mr. Representative Mackey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can we have a brief at ease?
The House stand at ease. Sir. We are still under unfinished business. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have three requests for excused absences. Move and ask unanimous consent that the following members be excused from the call of the House. Representative Navarre from 4:35 p.m. March 6 to 9:40 a.m. March 9. Representative Foster from noon March 6 to 12:35 p.m. March 8. Representative Zawacki from 5 p.m. April 9 to 5 p.m. April 12.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, those people are excused from the call of the House on those dates specified. Announcements of standing committees or special committees? Representative Carney.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to bring the members' attention to a meeting that's going to be held tomorrow, a joint meeting House Hess, the Senate Hess. We'll have Robert Gottstein speaking on the WISE project and Jerry Covey speaking on Alaska 2000. I'd like to welcome you all to join us.
Representative Moyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The House International Trade and Tourism Committee will meet tomorrow, Tuesday, at 5 o'clock to hear three measures, House Bill 490, Import-Export of Fish, Game, and Aquatic Plants, H.J.R. 81, Review of Travel Advisories, and H.J.R. 82, Recognize Tourism in Economic Statistics.
Okay. Representative Finkelstein.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The House Labor and Commerce Committee will meet tomorrow, Tuesday, at 1 p.m. to consider House Bill 426, Workers' Comp for Work-Study Students, House Bill 509, Uniform Custodial Trust Act, House Bill 461, Minors Under 14 Entertainment Jobs. Thank you.
Representative Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to remind members of the House Resources Committee that the House Resources Committee will meet tomorrow, Tuesday, from 3 to 5 p.m., we will hear for its first public hearing, House Bill 465, Recycling Solid Waste Management Plans. And then we will also have three bills pertaining to salmon marketing plans. So I would urge members to attend promptly. Thank you.
Any further committee announcements? Representative Navarre?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Finance Committee will meet about 15 minutes after adjournment.
Representative Donnelly?
Yeah, now that I've managed to decode some of the hand signals in the chambers here, Judiciary will start at about 2:15.
Okay. Representative Cabina?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The House State Affairs will be holding over House Bill 327 and 404, dealing with primary issues, until Wednesday.
Any further announcements? Committee or of a general nature? Special orders? Representative Lincoln?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to ask permission of the body under special orders to speak about sexual harassment and gender discrimination.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, proceed, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I hesitated to bring this up because I see there are so many that are gone that perhaps some of those that are gone would benefit from what I'm about to say. I was most concerned when on Wednesday, February 26th, this notice was posted throughout the Capitol halls, in bathrooms, about what is sexual harassment and gender discrimination and how it is different. And this was a brown bag lunch. And I reflected last year when, as a freshman or new legislator, one of the sessions that we were asked to go to was on sexual harassment and discrimination. And when I attended, I was appalled that there were two men in the room and the rest were all women. And I was appalled at that and puzzled at the same time that our male counterparts did not feel that that was one of the workshops that was critical to this body, and yet every other workshop that we had everybody in attendance. So when I saw this notice posted, I thought, well, I'm going to give my counterparts another opportunity. Perhaps I misjudged. And at noon, or about 10 minutes after 12, and I had another appointment that I was running to, but I went up to see who all was there. There was not one male in that whole session. They were all women of either that worked in this Capitol building or were presenters. And I was, again, appalled that the other significant part, the 50%, should not be there to listen to what sexual harassment means, what gender discrimination means, because that is not a female problem on either either of those two areas. It crosses both genders. And when to paraphrase Chief Justice Rabinowitz when he stated this morning, to accomplish solutions, we must act together toward a mutual understanding to reach collective goals. I don't want to see any, either male or female, feel uncomfortable in talking to one another, in being in a room with one another, in working together. I think that we should be beyond this, and it does puzzle me still to this day. It appalls me yet to this day that I would have to stand on this floor to talk about sexual harassment and gender discrimination of the male counterparts not taken a serious enough look at this that they would feel there was no need to attend. And Mr. Speaker, I urge the body next time that they see any workshop put on, that it would certainly be to the benefit of our offices to attend and listen to one another of these very serious problems that we see facing us today. I thank you for the time.
Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In defense of my male counterparts, I don't actually know how long of a timeline we had for consideration of that workshop, and people's schedules fill up way in advance. I was speaking that day at the state chamber meeting was in town. I was a luncheon speaker at the state chamber. I was interested. I was unable to attend. I suspect that that was the case with a lot of people, but I just want to say that if you want to schedule something like this where people are interested and you want them to attend, I would just ask that it be scheduled in advance enough so that people can get it on their schedules and at a time that is convenient for most people.
Any further special orders? Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Unanimous consent. We stand adjourned until 10 a.m. Wednesday.
10 a.m. Wednesday.